Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you, filling in for John Hockenberry. You know, everywhere we go nowadays, the media follows. Technology really has transformed the way we understand how we consume the news. Just 10 years ago, most of us read the morning paper or tuned into the evening news, one of the three major broadcast networks. Now, the growth of cable and the internet has totally disrupted those habits. According to the Pew Research Center, since 1980, the three major nightly newscasts, that's ABC, NBC, and CBS, of course, have lost about 28 million viewers. That's more than half their audience. And of course, the news we consume today, not only on the internet, follows us around on our iPhones and our mobile devices. Well, as that news audience splinters, our next guest worries that we're not getting the whole picture, really, that the news more than ever has become segmented, narrow, with stories that are mosaic tiles of a larger truth that the news misses, everything from restaurant reviews to political reporting, even to photos, just little pieces of a picture that we're not really seeing. Joining me now is Alain de Botton, author of The News, A User's Manual. Alain, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful to have you. You know, you say at the beginning of your book that news in modern society has largely or is largely replacing religion. And I noticed indeed that your book reads almost like a philosophical religious manual, something, a series of missives that the Dalai Lama might have passed down to his followers. And I don't mean to elevate you that much. You're probably not comfortable with it. But those two things seemed similar to me.
Well, look, you know, religion, we used to go to religion in order to find out, you know, right from wrong, the meaning of life. The most consequential and important issues would be raised in a religious context. Nowadays, in the more secular parts of the United States, that just isn't true. People turn to this other great dominant force in society, and that is the news.
You give the example, a couple of examples. You give the example of man requests lawyer, which is not an exciting scene, but if you draw back and then back and then back, you might be reading Anna Karenina. You give the example of a painting where if you're standing just 3 centimeters from the painting, it looks like not much. And if you step back and back to a meter or two, you're looking at the Last Supper, something great and full of context. What can the news do to achieve that kind of broader scope that you're talking about?
You know, the news needs us to keep coming back. And one of the ways in which it does that is that it keeps telling us that the update on the update of the update is the most crucial thing about a story. And of course, most stories running through our society cannot keep up with the news cycle. And in other words, we're constantly given headlines, apparently huge turning points of stories that are actually 20 years long or, you know, at least 1 year long, but not every 5 minutes. And yet we are catapulted from fear to hope to a catastrophic sense of foreboding by the machine that needs us to be alert and constantly poised to receive some, you know, absolutely cataclysmic revelation. And the world reality is not quite like that. So the result is that a lot of the news doesn't quite know where to go in our minds. And the clearest evidence of that is that if you say to most people, what was in the news last week, they won't be able to tell you. So this amazing source of information that was meant to change everything and make the world clear is oddly in danger of confusing us and leaving us slightly, well, for want of a better word, numb.
There is a great deal of, I'll call it advice for those of us who are in the news business, those of us who report on politics or even, as I mentioned, restaurant reviews or even photographers or photo editors. But what about the news consumer? You know, if so much of the news is reported in a segmented mosaic fashion, and I'm guilty of this as I read your book, I realized that I certainly am. What can the listener, the reader, the person on the end do for more context if the mosaic pieces they get keep coming? And of course, they don't want to be in the dark. They want to keep reading the news and understanding the world.
Look, I think, you know, a very basic insight that all news users need to have, we call it the news, but of course it's not the news. It's some news rather arbitrarily fished out of the billions of stories that humanity produces every year and packaged for you in a very particular way. And that's just something to always bear in mind. It is not the whole story. No news organization, though each news organization wants to claim this, no news organization can give you reality. Reality is multifaceted. And so we need to keep our eyes and ears open and also know, of course, when to switch off. I mean, the news Sabbath is something as a concept which would have sounded totally bizarre even 5 years ago. But now more and more people are going, I can't take this any longer. There's a limit to how much of this information I can collect and use.
One of the observations that you make also in the beginning of your book really struck me as a political reporter. You said that so much of the news in the end becomes the vague and unsurprising sediment of conclusions. And that really is what political reporting is all about. The example being very few people remember a lot of facts about a politician or an event, but they remember an overall picture. Mitt Romney is a greedy, rapacious, bad person. Barack Obama is an untrustworthy foreigner. These vague impressions that the little stories that I've reported 40 or 50 times don't matter anymore.
That's right. I mean, it tends to settle. All the little bits of information that we get settle into very broad kind of stories, because that's the way our minds work. Our minds have to sift information and chuck out the stuff that, you know, isn't relevant. You know, news editors and journalists tend to be very nervous people. They're all the time afraid of losing their audience. And they think the best way to not lose the audience is to throw a lot of stuff at them and see what sticks and keep the conversation turning. I mean, for example, you know, we're talking here for, you know, 7 minutes, maybe 6.5 minutes, right? And the feeling is, okay, what happens if this guy with a strange name from England kind of bores everybody? We've got to get him off the air, and we'll get to the better bit, and, you know, and maybe that will be bad too. So we'll do 4.5 minutes on something else, and then 3.5 minutes on something else. And, you know, the result is that after a few hours of listening to this stuff, you're just thinking, I am overwhelmed.
No, we're not overwhelmed. We're not bored at all, Alain de Botton, but our 7 minutes are up, and we're nearing the end of the show, so we have to let you go and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Alain de Botton is author of The News, A User's Manual. Well, we here at The Takeaway are going to take a hint from Mr. de Botton and wrap it up. We don't want you to take us for granted, after all, like the rest of the 24-hour news cycle. From Little Rock, Arkansas, accurate fast news is infinitely better than slow news. One of the major concerns of the 24-hour news cycle is the sacrificed accuracy.
My name is Robert Davis. I'm calling from New York City. I just wanted to say there is no such thing as too much information. However, misinformation can be used to manipulate the minds of the masses. So therefore, we must be ever vigilant and keep our filters in place so that we know what to take in and what to leave out.
Thanks to you, Robert. From Brooklyn, New York, it's nice to be informed. However, we don't need to be inundated. I feel like the 24-hour news cycle increases my anxiety. Also, I've noticed the younger generation feels the need for instant gratification. It's overkill. And David from North Miami, Florida writes to us, the 24-hour news cycle is a distraction. Failure to fund NPR and PBS to match the BBC conspires with laziness by few networks. Oh, aren't we self-serving for putting that in? David, I don't disagree with you, actually. Give us your take at 8778-MY-TAKE. You can send us your tweets at The Takeaway, and be sure to check us out on our website at thetakeaway.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Don't worry, he's back tomorrow. And this is The Takeaway.
Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.